in the rain.
We say what we say, we do what we feel, we gotta keep it real.
In the rain.
All about the crap of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning up in the rain room. Before the stars can be paid, there gotta be a dope ass story on the page. Let the beast about the cage, that light about the dark. Can you build the inferno from an itty bitty spark? Coffee shop hustlers rise with the cream. A million other writers, same Hollywood dream. Your pen and paper, all like bullets in the gun. Write what you feel, say what you want in the red room. We say what we say, we do what we feel, we gotta keep it real
in the red room.
All about the crap of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning up in the red room.
So look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in.
Yeah, what's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
2016.
Y'all know how it go, bitches.
Here we go.
On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that.
And shenanigans.
And shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
First of all, on Lisa's shenanigan. I'm telling you. I am telling you.
Ahead,
can I just say this? It has nothing to do. It's pop culture oriented.
Okay.
There's some writing involved in there somewhere.
Okay.
Find it. Get in where you fit in. I said this the other day on Twitter. Look. I said this the other day on Twitter. I said, listen, Frank Ocean fans, y'all bitching about him not having an album out in like 4 years.
Okay.
You know what? Artists got to do what they got to do. You know what? You're babies. You're weak. try waiting 15 years for an album from D'Angelo, bitches.
Right.
Okay, you know how long it takes from the right Novocaine, bitch? Novocaine.
Okay, from Brown Sugar to the Voodoo album, it took like 5 years, and that was fine. But from Black Messiah album, 15 years. So y'all sitting here complaining about 4 years.
Mm-hmm. But he's been producing everybody, though.
Thank you.
These young kids have
He's still around.
Let Frank Ocean live.
And he's a big producer.
You know what? I blame Pokemon Go. I blame it all on Pokemon Go.
Jeff, how does Pokemon Go fit into this?
Not the Pokemon. Not at all.
How does this fit into this? Oh my God.
If it's just something to say, leave me alone.
But anyway, I just had to toss that out.
Okay.
Because people still, and I don't think the album dropped. It's supposed to drop like Friday or something, and it didn't happen, or if it did, I missed it.
Okay.
But I just thought it was funny. It's like, y'all, can an artist be an artist? Not everybody needs to be dropping something every five minutes.
It's about timing. The album might be done, but he's like, look, I don't want to drop it today because such and such album's coming out
or
today.
When it's ready.
You know, whatever.
When it's ready.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Anyway, I have to get that off my chest today.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So y'all see how we do it on the Rant Room. That's Lisa Bolicazzo, my little co-host.
Yes.
You know.
You're looking quite fit today.
Yeah.
Like, you're on the level. You're the goals.
He had that superhero silhouette
when he walked
down the hall.
When he walked down the hall to his office, me and Jeff's in here chilling, waiting for him, and he came through and he had that silhouette. It was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, okay, I'm playing Luke Cage's little brother. I'm just going to let y'all know now.
I'm like, if I am in a Marvel comic TV show, walking down the hallway.
Little Ray Ray, you know.
Ray Cage.
Moisturized.
Yeah, you know, I probably got the cocoa butter on.
Yes, popping. I just had to just point that out and just be like, I hate you.
That's disgusting.
Anywho.
But as Lisa Bolicazzo, the street nerdist over there, a.k.a. the Black Gidget of Mission Beach, y'all. What's up, girl?
Hey, I'm all good.
Yeah. We ain't seen you in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Hey. If you get a chance to, and I told you this, and I told Jeff and everybody on Twitter, if you get a chance to, for the horror fans out there, go check out, if it's playing anywhere near you, Train to Busan.
Yes.
I'm going.
Did you
Korean
see the trailer?
She told
zombie
me the trailer. I was like,
horror movie.
I'm already there. Let me go today.
And like, y'all know I don't like zombies. I don't like zombie movies.
Zombies, though.
But I do. That's my, that, you know what? That's my Achilles heel. If you can give me a speed zombie, I'm so there. And the fact that it's Korean.
I turn my script in tomorrow.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's a really fun. I mean, like I told Jeff, you know, a couple people on there. It does have a schmaltzy kind of, the ending has a little moment where that all Korean films tend to have this in mind. I won't say all. I'll say like 90% of Korean films, whether it's horror, romance, whatever it is, they always have these like kind of schmaltzy, overly sentimental moments. And the music gets all, and then they had that little flashbacks. And I'm sitting in the theater with like, there was only like 10 of us in the theater. It was like almost a midnight showing in San Diego.
Well, it's not a very popular movie.
It's a foreign film because people got to read. Bitches got to read the screen. But it's horror. So
subtitles?
Yes.
Totally subtitles.
But you don't.
Really?
But you don't need no subtitles.
I'm joking.
You don't need. It's a zombie movie. You don't need to. You don't need to read subtitles to know that when people are screaming, stuff is bad.
Right.
You know. So it was a really fun and really entertaining. And for those of you who love fast zombie movies, I kind of describe it as Snowpiercer on a train.
Yeah.
Without the snow, but Snowpiercer with zombies.
What if the snow was zombies?
And what if the snow had melted?
Different levels and stages.
Imagine Snowpiercer if the snow had melted.
Okay.
Revealing an army of zombies.
An army of fast zombies.
Right?
Yeah,
so anyway, check it out. Really, really fun zombie movie. So anyhow. Carry on, sir.
I was inspired by it. You sent me the trailer, and I watched it. And I was like, good. So this means, because my film takes place in Japan, in Tokyo.
Okay.
Right? So I was like, okay, cool. This is telling me there is an audience for this over there.
Oh, God, yes.
You know? So that actually inspired me. I was like, good. This is cool. We're in the same realm. Mine is completely fucking different. You know, Tokyo is over, taken over by zombies and mine.
I think we are ready. I'm ready for more of the Asian horror to come out. Because for a while there, South Korea, the Korean horror market was just killing it.
Yeah.
Now, I will admit, for a while there, the Koreans, y'all know y'all did this. They were taking Japanese horror films and then remaking them. Y'all can't do. Don't be America.
No, we've seen these movies.
We've seen
You're
these
not
movies.
Fooling anyone.
I don't need the Korean version of Ring when I already have the Japanese version,
and
bitches.
The American version.
Yeah, and the American version did a little too much. Yeah. A little too much.
I like that one.
It was good, but it's like they didn't need to do all that extra because they tried. This is the reason why. Since we going off topic, I don't care. I'm gonna defend it.
Is there a topic? Do we have a topic?
Let me tell you. Okay, go ahead. Introduce Jeff, and then I'll say my piece.
So we got Big Bro in here to both of us.
Whatever.
TV producer himself, Pimp Dog,
yeah,
OG,
that's right.
Sci-fi nerd.
They're all of my titles.
The cool cat.
It's on his birth certificate.
So far, he has nailed not one of my, only one of my actual titles.
AKA Twitter head.
Oh, Lord.
AKA Don't Start None, okay, Won't Be None.
Don't Start None, Won't Be None.
Hashtag Watch It Back, motherfucker. Hashtag I will cut you.
Don't play that
Let
mess.
Let me keep going, bitch. We ain't done yet.
Oh my God.
Hi, Jeff.
I need to chill.
Hashtag
really
if you follow me, I warn you.
I will go in on nonsense. That's true.
Jeffrey throwing everybody.
Thank you for having me.
Jeff comes in like the shark on Jaws. Like, should be quiet. Like, I'd be on the boat and then and I'll be like, Jeff ain't said
like,
nothing.
Did I hear that? What the fuck?
And then you'll be on Twitter and sometimes they'd be like,
Well, you know what? There are a lot of stupid people on Twitter.
That's true.
And it's my job.
And it's your job.
To shut them all down one by one.
Wow.
Until my wife catches me. What are you doing? I thought you were writing.
Get off
this
of Twitter.
This is kind of like writing. No, it's not writing at all.
Hey, Twitter blogging is writing. I don't care what any motherfucker is saying.
No.
It is writing.
Hey, no.
Some people be getting jobs, though. Them comedy
that's not
joke writers
that's
and shit.
Because of children. That's how children are. They have short attention spans. And they see each other playing on a Twitter and they hire each other. And then 3 weeks later, they're like, wow, this guy can't write at all, can he?
There is. Also, let me just say, for the elephant in the room, we do have my girl in the room. Forgive me, just shout out your name. What is it?
Fahima.
Who is not like an elephant at all. She's lovely.
Mahmoud. Fahima Mahmoud in the house. I met her over at the Writers Guild, and she wanted to sit in. She has a new show. What are you calling it?
Muslim in the City,
y'all. It's a web series. Can the people
YouTube?
Go look at it now?
You can get on YouTube right now.
MuslimInTheCity.com on YouTube. Everybody go check that out. So she's sitting in watching us. She's going to have her own podcast.
Poor thing.
Call it?
Yes.
Under the same name, Muslim in the City, so look for that soon.
Listen, y'all need
check
to listen
out.
To this because
don't
one of the things.
Don't do what we do. Don't do what we do. Watch what we do and do the opposite.
Do the opposite of the shenanigans you're about to witness. But no, I think it's really great. I'm excited, but I mean, I wrote it down because I'm going to check it out and make sure I check out the podcast, because I think one of the things that we don't get to hear is young black Muslim women talking about their lives. Everyone has like these, like, you know how it is when you black and you walking around, you already got those stereotypes. Mm-hmm. But then you already got like Islam, and you know my heroes, my biggest hero, El Hajj Malik Shabazz, one of my favorite. And a lot of my heroes growing up were Muslim. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know this. My stepfather is ex-Nation of Islam.
You did tell me that.
And converted to Nation of Islam and then jumped out and was like Black Panther and all that. So my life has been very interesting, people. Mm-hmm. But I grew up with a lot of black Muslims in particular. So I think it's important that we get that viewpoint. And I'm so excited about your show, especially coming from young women.
Yeah.
Yes! Are you guys going to gossip and talk about fashion and TV shows and nerdy stuff?
Yeah, so we'll talk about like different cultural topics, race, dating, how we interact with the world, you know, work.
This is excellent. And I'm looking forward to listening to your show and seeing it. So please, folks, check that out.
I'm definitely on it.
But I just want to make sure everybody knew we had somebody else in the room. So thank you for coming, sitting in with us.
So there'll be about 40% less swearing as we have a guest.
So anyhow, back to my argument.
Go ahead. So wait a minute, hold on. So if you guys are grown, let's get it
okay,
in.
Okay, anyway.
Let me just make it official.
Okay, make it official. Who knows, be looking at me like, I'm going to put you out. Just go stand over there.
I don't even be setting up the show. She'd just be going in on the topic.
We don't even have a topic. I don't even know what we're supposed to be talking about.
People are like,
about.
What is this show about?
See, that's why you could have me an Oscar host. And they say, we need you to read all the stuff in the teleprompter. This is my ass. The winner is Bob.
Right.
Bob has won. Right. I was supposed to read the teleprompter? All right, go ahead. It's too late. Bob, you won. Come get your award.
Who won this. We all saw that movie. I don't know why we're bothering. Let's just go to the
Bob,
party.
Bob, come get it, okay? But the problem with American remakes with a lot of Asian horror is this. And this is my thesis, and I'm sticking by it.
Okay,
I'm sticking by it. Is American, when we deal with horror, Americans are so afraid of the unknown. Because America, because we're such a young country, relative to everybody else, we really don't have much of a history in terms of mainstream America. I'm not talking about Native America, and I'm not talking about those of us who was brought over here unwillingly.
Who was that? I don't know.
The melanated masses.
That's not my history books. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
But it's like, you know, so they're used to having some type of morality or some kind of explanation as to why things are messed up.
Yeah. Right.
What I love about a lot of Asian horror movies was they don't explain hardly anything. Shit happens, and then you must deal with it. They don't waste. They may give you a little snippet, like, "Oh, this might," but it's like, but there's no. Well, if we can solve it, because y'all learn with The Ring, even when you quote unquote, because in an American movie, you would have found the body, and like, oh, all the evil is stemming from this. If we can give her a proper burial, all the badness would go away. And homegirl was like, "No, I'm still coming out the TV set."
We put her down that well for a reason. We already buried her. This was as good as it was getting.
There was a reason why that heifer was thrown down there.
Right.
Y'all done took her out and buried her, and she's still mad. Like,
our best solve was put her in the well and these videotapes. And you had to get involved and mess with all of that.
So when Americans got it, I guess they named the character Samira or whatever the name was, and they gave like all this just all this backstory and stuff. And a good horror movie is not going to waste your time on a lot of too much backstory. Mm-hmm. Some backstory is good, but we don't need all of that. We need the horror stuff. So it's always – it's very rare that Americans do a really good remake of an Asian horror movie, in my opinion.
I see your point.
Because they don't understand that – Asia does not care about your feelings. They don't care about explaining why bad things happen. Because you got to remember, in Japan, we threw a fucking bomb on top of them. So shit goes bad really quickly. They got Godzilla after the atomic bomb. Like, they shit happens and you have to deal.
Why was I doing my research on Asian subway trains? And look, how come they have the, what do they call them? Not the conductor, but the guys who are outside trying to help you load in.
Let's call them ushers.
The ushers, whatever the fuck. People rush in the door.
This is why they're a little more aggressive.
Why when you see them here in America and they just like zoom past you, like, damn, bitch, can I get in? Mm-hmm. Right? They're more aggressive there because over there they're more aggressive.
Okay.
They literally rush to get onto the train.
Because there's so many people.
Countries.
So many people.
They rush to get on the train, and the conductors or whatever you want to call them, the porters or whatever, are pushing them in. They all line up to push them inside. So they must be face to face.
I'll be in jail. That's not happening.
With every, it is packed to the tilt. I'm like, that's not illegal.
Hey,
you know what I mean?
I gotta get to work, man.
Yeah.
I get to work.
When you have a population that has that many people in a small amount of space, that's the kind of stuff you're gonna see, you know. And a good example to see that, one of my favorite Japanese films is called Angel Dust. You can actually go see it on YouTube for free. It's a Japanese film. I think it came out, I want to say, 96.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite Japanese horror films. It's one of the first times, like I tell people, that I really notice sound design. It's the first time I really notice how effective horror and sound can be stylized in a way that's just so effective. But you see that. Part of the thing is like these murders happen on these subways, and you see all these people and pushing, and there's just so masses of people. So that'd probably be a good job.
Are we claustrophobic?
I would say.
I do not like crowds like that.
I don't either.
San Diego pushes my limits every year.
Yeah. Well, that's because of Comic-Con.
That's why I can't go to Comic-Con, because I've been, and it just drives me bananas. So many people.
I have to get out of there every couple hours.
Did you go this year?
No, I was house sitting this year.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I would have come down. I saw the pictures.
It's been in forever.
It's been, you know what? I've stopped going. Like, when I do go, like last year I went, I didn't go inside. I hung out outside.
Hung out outside.
Well, there's enough.
There was so much good stuff happening, and I was having lunches with people.
The SlamCon. I didn't even, you know, I didn't get that at all.
There's a SlamCon. I've heard of that,
man. Apparently, there's a whole StealthCon going on at the same exact time.
There was so much.
Some people did not invite me to certain things, and you know who you are.
Ooh.
So that shall be paid.
He wasn't looking at me. Don't look at me. It wasn't me.
About people listening to this podcast.
You're looking at me like,
the fact about certain events that I should have been invited to, and you know exactly who I'm talking to.
No
Christmas, because I was already home. But yeah,
no Christmas cards for you.
Do you guys want to talk about the movie you guys went to go see and the hanging out with Lynelle White and all that?
So, hey, Lynelle, we should have told Lynelle to come on in.
I didn't think about it. I was so busy this weekend.
But she's like, right. So, anyway, hi, Lynelle. So, we had a writer's adventure together, so we went to go see...
That's okay, because I wasn't invited to that.
You know what? You know what? No, no, no.
I wouldn't have been able to go anywhere.
No, and that's what I told them. They were like, because the first thing they asked me was, how come you didn't invite Hilliard?
I wouldn't have been able to go.
And I said, look, Hilliard is in the middle of, like, he's got this documentary, he's doing so much stuff. Like, Hilliard usually lets me know ahead of time, hey, I got this free time, and that's when I can kind of segue in and say, can you come? So it wasn't like I wasn't thinking of my boy. He working.
See how I get treated for him?
He is working. Look, he is working, people.
No respect.
So we decided to have a writer's day and go check out Star Trek. Is it Beyond?
Beyond.
Yes. So Star Trek Beyond. I had already seen it.
The first hip-hop Star Trek.
It was the first hip-hop Star Trek.
Why is that? Is it hip-hop in the movie?
You'll see.
You'll see.
Hip-hop saves the universe.
Saves the galaxy from Idris Elba.
So, and you know,
you think we're joking. We are not. I'm not even a little bit joking. The wind was a hip-hop wind. I couldn't believe it.
Hip-hop saves the universe.
And it was good hip-hop.
Yes, thanks Beastie Boys and Chuck D and Public Enemy. And so, anywho, so we went to go see the movie. Like I said, I've seen it, and I told them, hey, come see it. And I told the reasons why I enjoyed it and wanted to see it again. Sure. Me, it was nostalgia. Also, the deaths of Leonard Nimoy and Anton Yelchin. And just, you know, it was really classy in how they handled that in the story. Also, it's just great to see, you know, even though I will say this, I love Star Wars too, but Star Trek is one of my favorites because of the characters and the longevity of the characters. And I really love the casting. I think they were really spot on in casting the people who are playing the new crew, which is always amazing. So anyway, I wanted them to enjoy that and go see it and like live vicariously through them. So we went to the Grove.
We had a ball.
And I was mad because we got to the Grove. And I'm sitting there telling them now, can you smuggle my hummus sandwich in your purse? And then we get in there, we get our tickets. And then the dude at the counter was like, oh, you know you can bring food in here.
He did not. You can bring food in the Grove?
Are you kidding?
Oh, because they got their farmer's market
with
the there.
ArcLight
now,
anyway, because ArcLight gives you beer while you're sitting. I'm like, why would you give people in Hollywood alcohol at a movie theater?
That. All that time trying to smuggle into her nice fancy bag. I could have came in with all my stuff in there. So anyway, so we got in there, and then after the movie, we went and had dinner. And that Jeff treated.
Like a late lunch.
It was supposed to be a late lunch.
Did you say y'all was there for seven hours?
The movie was at 2:30. The movie we got out of the theater about 4:30.
Went over to one of those.
So 4:30. So from 4:30 between 4:30 and I would say like 4:45 to 5, we were trying to decide where we were going to eat. And I said we kind of checked out a couple places. And I said, hey, this place I've been here for, their food's pretty good. So we went in there. That might have been, let's say, maybe 5 o'clock. We didn't leave till 12 midnight, y'all.
We closed the restaurant.
They were blinking the lights. We had dessert.
I hope y'all kept ordering some shit.
Wait. Jeff spent enough money. He treated us. And then Jeff tried to be cool about it. And then he was like, can I get another lemonade?
To go?
No, we were just there nursed, a long time. We were just talking. I felt bad we were taking up this table.
Yeah. So but
I
no.
Like, can I get some more alcohol?
No. It was okay. And the reason why I think it was okay was because it wasn't that crowded or that busy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like there were a bunch of people coming in to take up all the different seats. Right. So it was a nice good amount of people there.
They were mean.
And plus we looked fabulous and we were animated. And I think we were a good PR for their restaurant. Yes.
Okay.
Anyhow, so we talked.
They didn't say the restaurant's name. I didn't remember what it was.
So we talked about all kinds of stuff, and I thought to myself, "Oh my God, Jeff, you don't." And Jeff, we were talking about a couple other films,
Ghostbusters
and Stranger Things. Yeah. And I thought,
did she tell you that she actually liked Ghostbusters?
I liked it too
because she went in on it at first.
I still have my problems with the Leslie Jones character. It has some stuff,
but they're the normal movie issues when you're folding in a black character.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And either people juggle that and drop the ball, or they juggle it and they make it work.
Sure.
So, and that's when I said, we got to come in and have you come and talk about, because it was part of our conversation that we had about all kinds of things. But it was one of the things where it's like when writers are bringing in black characters, mm-hmm. and a lot of times their success or failure is depending on how many passes they go through the script, just to make sure that the character, like you said, is folded in completely, where it's not like you're just there because you're the black character.
Or other. It doesn't have to be black. It can be any non-white, straight male.
That doesn't fit in organically with the thing, where you have moments where you're like, hey, I can tell, this is my litmus test. If I'm sitting there watching a show and you have a non-white character or anybody who's a character that's different that we normally don't see, mm-hmm. if I watch your movie or TV show and I start to think, wait, why would their family, where is their family? Who are their people? Like, why would they want to be, who are they hanging around?
Yeah.
If I start to get taken out of the story because I'm concerned about, because your character sticks out so much and they're not fitting in, then I'm thinking, why would you subject yourself to that by moving? And I'm thinking backstory for your character, and I'm out of your movie. Mm-hmm. So we were just talking, so we thought we would bring this to you, mm-hmm. kind sir,
yeah.
okay,
and talk about this. So Jeff, go ahead, take it away. Take
I mean, we were joking about it, but like basically it's one more pass. Mm-hmm. So, like, for Ghostbusters, we call it the Patty Pass. Okay.
And those of you who haven't seen it, stop.
Yeah, this is
spoilerific.
It's a month ago, damn it.
It's been a while.
But it's spoilerific.
Right.
So it's been a while.
If you haven't seen the film yet, please back away.
Right.
Not slowly, back the hell away. but the other thing is, we should go in with a preface.
Go ahead.
They solved a lot of the problems that had happened to the Ernie Hudson character, which had been written to be a thicker, more vibrant character in the original Ghostbusters, and then for various backstage shenanigans had been edited down, rewritten down to the way that we ended up seeing him.
To basically him just being the random black guy.
Random black guy, which sucks, because frankly, Ernie's a fantastic
actor. Yes.
And the other guys, I would say Bill Murray's like second to Ernie in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
The other actors are comedians in a movie. Mm-hmm. Nothing against that, but you had this great thespian that could go any distance in any direction, comedy, drama, horror, whatever, and then you edited him down to just the black guy, right? So
it was the early 80s. So it was a little different time, right?
There's no excuse.
There's no excuse. There's always a contemporaneous film that you can go, yeah, but this movie came out the same year. So it's really kind of on you, writers,
right.
studio.
Right.
So let us just say that Ghostbusters – female Ghostbusters, what do we just call it? Ghostbusters version 2? Okay. Ghostbusters version 2 solved a lot of that. The Patty character is much more integrated into the story, much more vibrant person. Les Dog certainly filled it up even more so than it was written.
Mm-hmm.
So there, if you walk away from it not feeling the things I felt, you've lost nothing. They solved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to the filmmakers. I think their heart's in the right place. However, there were a couple. There were three things, and I wrote a little thing on my Medium. I wrote a little article about it on my Medium because of the whole Leslie Jones getting kicked off or driven away from Twitter for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But it folded into this. There were three strategic scenes in this film that, with very minor changes to the dialogue of those scenes, would have made her just a fourth real part of the story instead of three ladies and one lady, right? In the opening bit when you first meet her, they sort of give you a little hint of, she has this ridiculous encyclopedic knowledge of the structures, the architectural history. Now, it's weird. It's geeky, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. I am a geek. Yeah. I know a lot about some really obscure things.
True.
So unless you pull that trigger, you're not going to know.
Right.
But I have expert-level knowledge about some crazy, weird stuff. I just don't have a PhD in it, right? There are a lot of people in the world like that. Every mechanic.
He's just well-read. Does all that.
Every person who taught themselves to be a mechanic functions sort of the same way. Where you're going. There's some guy in your neighborhood you'd rather fix your car than a pro.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. So she's that person.
Okay.
On her specific area of crazy geek knowledge is New York architecture and its history, which is in itself very interesting, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Especially coming out of this woman who you've set up as a subway worker, right? Nothing against subway workers, but the average person walks by a subway worker and thinks of them essentially as a machine in a human body.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you're already getting a window opened on that. No, they're actually people in those booths. They think things and feel things and have lives. So you see a little bit of that. But it's sort of passed over as sort of just a throwaway joke.
Okay.
And she has a little ghost experience, goes to the Ghostbuster ladies, hey, I had a ghost experience. Chicks need to come down here and solve this crap right now. Then they go down there, and again, you see a little bit of her knowledge. There's a little bit of a moment between her and the whatchamacallit character, the one I'm in love with.
Holtzman.
That's my girl. That was my high school dream girl. Was Holtzman. Mm-hmm. And no, I don't care if she's gay. She's still my high school dream girl. So then they have a little tiny moment of, wow, you know a lot of stuff about this, mm-hmm. right? And then ghost attack, blah, blah, blah. Everyone screams and runs away and freaks out. None of their devices work, and it's very funny, right? And then there was another scene near the end when they've had a whole bunch of experiences, and they're sort of solving the mystery. The ladies have got together over the table, and their little himbo is bringing them tea, and they're pulling out maps and, you know, charts and stuff and going, well, this happened, and then this happened. And then sort of the big solve of the X marks the spot moment, which had to do specifically with the history of New York architecture, right. does not come out of the mouth of the Patty character. It comes out of Kristen Wiig's character.
Right.
And I was like...
Because she's a star, right?
But really, it's an ensemble piece.
Right.
You can call her the star if you want, but in terms of actual screen time, most of them got... The person who got was Holtzman, right? Who actually makes the biggest impression.
Right.
With
the least amount of dialogue.
Least amount of stuff. But she... Her gunfight versus it's the ghost
epic.
Was worth the price
yes.
of
the
visit. Oh my God, he played on a loop at my house. So what I was saying was, with one more pass...
Mm-hmm.
You could have, with no budgetary change, with a minor budgetary, there would be a little bit extra scene in the opening bit,
right.
the first meter. Yeah. But the others are just dialogue changes, mm-hmm. right? Because they give her this lovely moment near the end where she says, wow, I'm really a Ghostbuster. Like, the Patty character kind of, she herself was like, I'm not really one of these chicks until this moment. It was nothing. It was a throwaway line in the actual movie. But had they supported it with, wow, these people are PhDs. But I have a PhD level knowledge about something that none of them know about that is actually helping us win.
Right.
So that at these different moments in the film, and like I said, there's only three moments.
Right.
Like the rest of it's gold.
Yeah.
Right?
Patty would have risen over the course of the movie to the level of, well, she may not have a degree, but homegirl is in this.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And then so at the end when she goes, wow, I am a Ghostbuster, because you see her not being treated well because of her knowledge.
And that would have been a nice bookend, especially with her being presented as this person that people just pass by every day and don't think of as a human.
Treat like a geek.
And treat like whatever, whatever. And then to have that nice little...
And it fits the theme of the movie,
because
the other three women had had that experience in academia.
Right.
Right. So if you meet this other woman who, by appearances, she's not white, she's larger than the other women, she's certainly more sort of verbally aggressive than the other women, in many other ways different than them, but it turns out, oh no, all us geeks are geeks together.
Right.
All of us who have this knowledge have knowledge together.
Mm-hmm.
It's us against the world. So then at the end, it's a it's the Fantastic Four, not the Fantastic 3+1.
Right.
Well, you know, I heard on The Business, was it Kim Masters or whatever? She was talking about, she was interviewing the two writers of that movie, and they were saying that the part that Leslie had was supposed to be the part that Melissa, what's her name, did something like, they switched it later on.
Doesn't matter.
You know what I mean?
Still need a pass.
Still need a pass?
If you're going to make that choice, you still need to do the pass.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter. And that leads us into Stranger Things.
Right.
Right.
Okay, let's go.
I love Stranger Things.
Well, can tell to everybody the premise. The premise.
Well, here's what I told my wife, so she wouldn't watch it because she can't take horror
movies. What channel is it on?
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
It's great. It's a little series. What, 8 episodes?
It's only 8 episodes right now.
Oh, it's on my list. I haven't
watched it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's sort of an homage to the 1980s. You know what it is? What if Stephen King had a novel adapted to a TV series?
Okay. And Steven Spielberg
at the height of his powers.
Right.
So it's got the E.T. vibe. It's got a Poltergeist vibe.
The Goonies. It's
sort of Little Close Encounters vibe. Yeah. But it's not... See, I hate nostalgia. People keep calling this nostalgia, but it's not. It's more like an homage. It's made in the style of, but it isn't about.
But it makes it's not a style, but it makes some of us who from the 80s who that geeky nerdy, it made us feel nostalgic because they're playing Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. They got the thing posted. Like literally I tweeted like, how did they get in my house from the 1980s? That was my house. Rotary phones. Yeah, it's a period. It's in the 80s.
That time period. Mm-hmm. And
1983.
These kids, it's kind of like it in a way. Like the kids stumble on some really dangerous, crazy.
But there's no Pennywise as of yet, as far as we know.
Right. it's definitely not a pure Stephen King novel. It's not quite as dark as Steve will go. Yeah,
which I wish it would.
So far, I'm sure they'll get another season.
Mm-hmm.
They have these four boys, one of whom has something bad happen to him, and the other three freak out about it. And they're like, what can we do? They don't bother with their parents because parents are stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You're not stupid parents, but kids think you are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a black kid. There's a sort of nerdy kid. There's two nerdy kids, and one of them disappears. So there's a surviving nerdy kid who's sort of the leader of the three remaining kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sort of... He's like Chunk in the Goonies. He's sort of chubby and goofy.
He's so adorable.
He's crushing on the older sister.
He's so adorable.
All this kind of stuff. But he's also hyperverbal. Clearly, they're all very smart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Spielberg kids,
okay.
Right? Then there's the black kid who, throughout the course of this first season, there's nothing wrong with the actor. In the lines themselves, I guess you could say there's nothing really wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
But the aggregate is he's really just there to be black. And be told why he's wrong about something.
Like, right? Can you give us an example? Like what?
I don't want to spoil it because this is active and it really should be watched. It's a good show.
Mm.
All right. I preface this things with these are people who have their hearts in the right places. These are not people out to get whatever minority group. They clearly didn't have to include any people. This could have been a lily white show and no one would have blinked because it's set in freaking New England.
Mm.
Yeah. So like there are plenty of towns in New England with not one non-white person in them, and no one would have blinked. Mm. No blink. But if you're going to do it, you got to do it. You can't just fold someone and go, yeah, they're black,
right,
or whatever. Right. Then you're not doing me a favor as a black viewer. That doesn't help me. It doesn't include me. It makes me understand you don't really know me.
Mm.
So this kid has no parental – there's no visuals on his parents.
So they never take him – they never go home.
You see him at his house. You just never see his folks or how his house works.
He's kind of like Charlie Brown kids. Like, are there any adults here at all?
But everybody else you go home with.
Right. And then there's this weird thing that happens that I don't want to spoil, but they meet an exotic character, a person of magic or science or whatever that you wouldn't normally meet.
Mm-hmm.
And the two white boys, they instantly sort of fall smitten with this person. The black kid is like, what's the deal here? Like instantly becomes sort of aggressively negative about the inclusion of this new person, which to me as a black person who's often in environments where I'm surrounded by white people, not in an aggressive way. That makes it sound more aggressive than it is. But
a little bit.
But in that, I'm keyed to the idea of the other, whether I wish to be or not.
Mm-hmm.
So my response to a new other showing up, unless they develop negative qualities in front of me, which this person had not done that, I'm not going to take an instant dislike. I'm probably going to be more empathetic to their situation. The odds are higher that I'll be empathetic, especially as a kid who you've witnessed being beat up or bullied by older mean kids in the course of this show.
Mm-hmm.
So they clearly know what it's like to be on the outside of the cool kids. Mm-hmm. That was my first like, what? Right? And the second one was, where are his folks? Like, we see everyone else's folks. Where are his folks?
Well, I was telling Lisa brought this up to me. It must have been a year ago. And I remember, because I'm on, four committees of the Writers Guild now. And I announced on the last show that, I'm officially the vice chair of the black committee and the LGBT committee.
What?
And apparently the first ever to be on two. I didn't know that.
Look at you. It's all that working out.
As much
out.
As I'm there, goddammit.
Okay. It's all that working out.
No.
It's what
so,
it is.
So true. So the interesting thing was, so I've had this conversation based off of a conversation you and I had just on this exact topic and I've had this conversation on the education committee in front of a lot of really big, you know, full of showrunners in there. And I was sitting in the room just, I got there early, which is me and Jeff Melvoin, and we were sitting talking, and we were just talking about what I'm doing and whatever and blah, blah, blah. And somehow we started talking about diversity and all these other things. And I said, you know, Jeff, I said, one of the things that I would ask you to do whenever you do your showrunners program is when you're talking to the writers about, you know, staffing and the things they should do for diversity, you should also mention to them when they're writing the characters. One of the most important things that we never see, perfect example that you said, we never tend to seem to go home. We see them in the office.
Right.
We see the leads or whatever going home with them. They have a wife or a boyfriend or husband, whatever, but we never see that character at home.
Right.
That is a small thing that sounds minor, but it humanizes them.
Mm-hmm. Humanizing is the purpose of this.
Humanizing right. just moments. It can be
and it
can
be tiny thing, like getting up, waking up, and there, you can see their family life. I have to go to work, y'all. What are y'all doing over there? Just something exactly. brief that we
or just
can just
a voice
say.
In the background. Are you still on the phone? Just Mom, something. Leave me alone.
Just anything.
Anything, like right?
Yeah.
The other thing is, if they'd simply switched the two characters, if they'd flipped the black kid with the kid with the two front teeth missing, changed no lines whatsoever.
Right.
No harm, no foul. Right. And all of a sudden, you've got an interesting black character that you, especially
never
as a kid,
before, right?
You would have literally never seen in a feature ever before. Even ones made by black people would not have introduced that character. Mm-hmm. It's one of these weird blind spots where you can tell the sensibility of the writer creators of a piece have their hearts in exactly the right place. They clearly wanted to do this. They didn't have to do this. There's no one making them do this, especially on Netflix where they give creators much more basically carte blanche to do whatever.
Right.
So I give them all their props for wishing it a thing to be so, but it needed one more pass.
Just one more pass. Just something to look and just really think. And I think as writers, a lot of times we get so excited, and especially if you're a writer and you're writing about people who aren't like yourself, sometimes you got to do that little extra, you know? And sometimes it might be a simple thing like Jeff said, switch the characters around and see how that changes things. You know, just those little things, because the worst thing you want to do is get me in a theater and have me thinking about, what? How did this person get to live?
But does
it almost makes me feel like sometimes you don't need to have people of color in your movie.
And this goes out.
Sometimes
to
you ain't got to have us in there.
I've said this before and gotten in trouble for it, but it's the same thing that black so-called all black shows do as well. They'll throw in a white character who almost invariably ends up being the whipping boy.
Right.
It's like, you're just here so I can take out my anger on white people. You're going to be stupid. You're going to always make the mistake and say the dumb thing. We're never going to really get to know you.
Right.
But anytime I need to make a joke with a white person as a butt, Mike just happened to walk in.
There you go.
And I'm like, that's not helping anything. You're not solving anything. If you have this issue, go to your therapist. You know, seriously, talk that shit out with somebody.
Or your pastor.
Right, or your pastor or whoever you talk to that helps you get better in life.
Right.
Okay. Because that's not where you work your crap out. You're actually adding to the aggregate of crap by doing that. So it's not just a white against non-white thing, not a straight against gay thing. It's just when you're writing someone that you've always think of as the other, you have to go that extra mile. You have to do one more pass. I am not gay. I know a lot of gay people. I have gay siblings, family members, all of that stuff, but I'm not actually in the life. So if I integrate a character into a story that is really, really part of the story, I have to do that gay pass. I have to go seriously. I have to get
that's
it.
Real.
I have to get it vetted by people, not just one.
Right.
There's no such thing as a gay person. There's a bunch of people who happen to be gay. Right. You have to do it extra, or don't do it.
Exactly.
I'm perfectly fine with you doing something set in Mormon country with no black people in it. Set that shit in Mormon country.
And I prefer to, because then I'll be sitting there like, well, why would you want to be a Mormon anyway?
Or
you're
black,
but the history of Mormonism didn't let y'all in. Like, and then I'm totally out of the movie, because I'm like, why would they put a person
just
in
do
there?
One more pass. Just do one more pass. One more pass.
And a lot of us don't do that. It's funny, because I was looking at a screenplay from a friend of mine, and they were writing about a character and asking questions about it, and like, well, and I was just like, you just need to just kind of flip a couple characters and your problem will be solved. You know, we don't even have to worry about is it authentic to the experience. And I'm like, how about you just do this and just give this character these lines and solved. And it was like done. You know, it's just those little simple things. So, you know, as we tell the baby writers out there and everybody who's doing these things, like I said, go check out the Star Trek movie. Go check out Stranger Things and see what we're talking about. Check out Ghostbusters.
See if you agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think Star Trek did a really good job. Because it's like when I'm watching it, I'm not thinking of, you know, Uhura as being a black, you know. You don't think about that. Because everybody's pretty much the same. We don't really get to see the home life of everybody else in the background. She's just part of the crew. Mm-hmm. So there's never any moments when I'm watching that film or any other of those characters, like Sulu, which was great because they showed his family.
Yeah, they made such a big deal. And I was like, this is a lovely little
film. Yeah.
They made it seem like it was going to be like, Sulu is gay! He's the Grand Marshal of the Pride Parade.
And then everyone's going by with jazz hands throughout the whole thing. It's like, it was just a lovely small family moment. It was a basic, normal moment that everybody has had when you come back home from doing some service. And you got a little civilian spouse. Time. Mm-hmm. See your spouse and your child. Like, hey, baby, let's go have whatever. And that was it.
It was just lovely. Just, I mean, like,
done well.
I don't even give him props for it. It was so normal. Like, this is, what, 100, 300 years in the future?
This is the way it's supposed to be.
I think he can hug his husband and walk away with his daughter and nobody does anything. Yeah, give me a freaking break.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, on that note, well, thank y'all, man. I appreciate it. This is going to be a nice little, quick little episode for y'all. Y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. So where you at, Jeff Thorne?
JeffreyThorne.com. It's very easy. I'm all over Twitter, apparently, with a G. I'm all over Twitter. Apparently, I go in on people. So be careful. And I just put out my Marvel just did a little promo. Last time I was here, I couldn't talk about it aggressively.
Well, go ahead.
My character Mosaic, brand new character I created for Marvel. They were gracious enough to let me. They did a little free promo at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
And a 10-page story that they're just giving away.
Wow.
To let people know we're coming in October.
Yes.
Carrie Randolph and Emilio Lopez are on the art, and they're both amazing. Like, amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm really proud of it. And that's where I'm at.
Buy that shit when it comes out, people.
Dude, buy the hell out of it, y'all.
And you're developing right now. You got some shit coming on.
I'm writing some stuff. I got a new... there's an anthology coming out. Oh, and I'm writing Solo for Marvel as well. I got two Marvel comics coming out. Solo, I'm co-writing with Jerry Duggan. It's sort of in the tone of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Yeah, it's like a humorous spy action thing. Heavy on action, slightly lighter on the humor. It's not Deadpool. Okay. He comes out of Deadpool, but he's not nearly as funny as Deadpool. It's not meant to be.
Okay.
But it's funnier than a James Bond movie. Let's put it like that.
Yeah.
So we're doing that. That's dropping in October as well. We're very pleased with the first issue so far. I'm in the middle of the script for the second issue, which I have to turn in on Monday. So that's going good. Some anthology stuff. I'm doing free comics.
And we stole 4 hours of his writing time last week.
You ridiculous wenches. No, and I got a free comic I'm doing on Medium called Dreamnasium Tales, which is started because I realized there wasn't a lot of fantasy material that focused on non-whites, non-straights, and women. So I made up a fantasy universe which has its own rules and all this kind of stuff. And it's these three women wandering around in sort of pseudo-Africa, although they're not all Africans. There's an Arab. There's an Arab and two Africans, I guess you would say, although it's not Africa, so whatever. But having adventures. And it's free. I'm giving it away. I'm drawing and writing myself. Yes. It's called
What's the other one that I read?
The one you read was...
He's kind of like a Luke Cage type of dude.
Oh, Prodigal.
Yeah,
Prodigal 2 is coming out later. We're actually, Todd and I, my partner, were just talking about this. We're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff on Comixology, which is sort of like the Netflix of digital comics. We have one or two things up there right now, but we're going to be publishing our own stuff through our company, Genre 19, on Comixology either end of this year or beginning of next year, depending how quickly we can get through their process.
Okay.
And they'll just be short 99-cent subjects featuring our characters to let people know we're out here and our characters are cool and, you know, like – And by the way, a lot of this, Hollywood Oscar so white stuff about Asian Americans, letting all y'all know, I've been down with that from day one. I got South Asians in my books from day one. I got Asians in my books from day one. I got biracial people. I got gay people. And I wasn't even doing it to stand on a chair and say, look at me.
I wasn't hand waving.
I was just saying.
You were just acknowledging it. What you see in your world. Right?
Just people in the world exist. They ought to be in my superhero comics.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing comic book wise. Just running around trying to get work like all the other mid-level writers are trying to get staffed and stuff.
The next time we have you on the show, next episode, we're going to talk about what it's like being a mid-level trying to keep work.
It's brutal, man. It's freaking brutal.
Let's talk about that. Where are you at, Lisa?
You know, you can always find me on Twitter. Shout out to those people who were with us with Saturday Night Sci-Fi last night with Geek Soul Brother and also Black Girl Nerds. We did Stranger Things. We were trending last night. We were like number five. Wow. And that was really exciting because it's like, you know, we've been, you know, Geek's been doing this for about over a year now, and it's been growing, and it's really nice to see that some of my favorite Twitter peeps are just like combining and just having fun and just being ourselves, and it's being noticed. So it was really nice to see it trending, and it was really cool because it was the first time I was watching Stranger Things.
Well, I have to ask Geek if maybe there's a way. Since you write so much sci-fi stuff, maybe there's a way to do like even like something on a comic book and have everybody, maybe you can do a PDF and everybody can read it, or you know what I mean? Something. Mm-hmm. Hey, so it's not always just like a movie.
Right.
But maybe that's another thing. What is it? Visible Women? Did you notice
this? Yes!
Visible Women.
Oh, my gosh.
Is a hashtag. One of the things that has happened in the comic book industry over the last two years, I would say, is that finally Marvel and DC, much more Marvel, somewhat DC, have started bringing in people that they were traditionally left out.
Okay.
But for female, or how do you say it, for female artists.
Right, women artists.
For women artists. Yeah. Whatever the code word du jour is. Ladies who can draw their ass off but can't get any sort of traction because either no one knows who they are or they're doing obscure books or whatever it is. So some genius, I'm sure she was female.
Oh, she was.
Said, you know what? Hashtag visible women. Put your art up.
I want to say Sue Kelly.
Let me tell you.
I'll have to look. But
there are some ladies on here.
Head out for him.
There are some ladies on here that I'm like, amazing. Where have you been all my life?
Yes.
Like amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. Not because they're women. They shouldn't be excluded because they're women. Mm-hmm. These are gladiators ready to fight.
Right.
And put them in the ring.
And they have,
like, holy crap.
Every style you can think of that you want to have, they have it. So please go online on Twitter and check out that hashtag Visible Women. Great art. Especially if you're trying to do your own independent comic book.
Yes.
Hook up with some of these women who are doing great work.
Here's what I'll tell you, and then I'll shut the hell up. This is an official pro tip. Some of these women are incredibly talented, but they have no resume. So nothing against them, but that means their rate is going to be lower for you as an independent creator to hire them. All right? They don't deserve a higher rate. Mm-hmm. They have no footprint yet. They just have talent. Their job is to build their resume. Your job is to find an inexpensive artist who can draw their ass off. Mm-hmm. Do the freaking math.
Okay.
Like, holy crap.
Okay.
I'm hiring some of these people already. I'm already contracting a book cover for one of my books. I just couldn't believe some of the artwork I was seeing.
Right.
Not because they were female. Mm-hmm. It's like anything you see that's excellent. You're just like, holy crap. Why don't I already know about you?
Yes.
You
know? Where have you been?
So check out that hashtag Visible Women. Get on that. Get on that. Everybody get on that.
Yeah. So catch me up on Twitter, BitchFlix, and, you know, always on Saturday Night Sci-Fi when I'm not hanging around for 7 hours in a restaurant with Jess Linnell.
It's your own fault. I blame you.
Hey, I was going to say, and big shout out to Paul Gill. He wanted to be here. You know, he actually wanted to call
Paul
in. I'm like, no, we need you on the show.
Is he in town?
Huh?
Is he in town?
He's still going.
He's still in town. Okay.
What do you say, mid-August or something?
I think so. And that's also a prime example of a person who knows how to do one more pass, by the way.
Oh, right.
Okay. He'll do like three more passes.
And fast. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, shout out to you, Paul. So I am your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show.
A.K.A. Moisturized Calves.
A.K.A. Cocoa Butter mixed with, mixed with baby oil.
Riri Cage.
Hashtag all the coconut oil.
Lil Jojo Cage.
Skin smooth as a baby, baby.
You're so stupid.
Oh, my God. Why do I do this to myself?
You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Big shout out to all the countries. You guys know who you are. We appreciate you guys following us all over the place. So you have to shout out everybody.
Yeah.
I need to be better at that. I don't do it enough. I'm talking to
your
human,
fans
by the
know
way.
You appreciate it.
You know, we need to start. You need to read their iTunes thank yous and their comments and stuff, all that. So one day I'm going to do that shit.
But ignore the jerks. Ignore the jerks.
Exactly.
There will be a lot of jerks.
Hey,
ignore
read
them.
Read them too. Let people know, no, you know, fuck no. It. You'd rather have good and bad. You know what I mean? Anyway.
No, shut
so
up.
Y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room.
Just like shut up.
On this show. Shut up, bitches. On this show, we keep it real. real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2016.
Peace, y'all.
Ciao.
In the rain, we say what we say, we do what we feel, we gotta keep it real. In the rain, all about the crap of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning up in the rain room. Before the stars can be paid, there gotta be a dope ass story on the page. Let the beast about the cage, that light about the dark. Can you build the inferno from an itty bitty spark? Coffee shop hustlers rise with the cream. A million other writers, same Hollywood dream. Your pen and paper, all like bullets in the gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. In the red room, we say what we say, we do what we feel, we gotta keep it real. In the red room, all about the crap of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning up in the red room.
So look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in. Mm-hmm.